That the amendments restate existing law, I don't suppose we have any great problem with them, but I know, and Ms. Skillman told me at the last hearing of one of the attorneys that brought one of those cases, and I, in my opinion, he's kind of a crackpot, and I think he's, I would think that the state would not have much trouble getting rid of that very large allegation in that case. I think under the extensions of the immunity, Ms. Clark points out that you'd be doing away with all liability when a Children's Services Division fails to remove a child from the home of a known child abuser, when the Board of Medical Examiners fails to take any action in response to clear evidence of a physician's impairment, and would exempt the state and an individual, and I think that's the important thing, and the individuals at fault here from a deliberate deliberately letting someone escape. You'd be letting the individual off the hook that did that, as well as the state.
Mr. Charlie, just bring me back to reality here. When we talk about tort claims limitation, it's usually within scope of employment stuff. And malfeasance, misfeasance, and intentional conduct that you just described strikes me as possibly being outside the scope of employment. I mean, they're not authorized to let anybody out of jail.
Well, if you're standing there in your prison uniform and you take your prison key and you unlock the door, it seems to me you're acting in the scope of your employment, even though you may not be authorized to do it. It's something nobody else let him out except a state employee.
Right, but I don't, you know, I think I think you make an argument that that's not within the scope of their employment to purposely avoid
well,
the law.
I hope that's true. I mean, if the state isn't liable, then I guess what you're telling me is it's the committee's intent that the individual employee would be liable and that would not be indemnified
well, I think
by
the state.
State
I think the purpose of that amendment, I thought, was to simply make the state the named defendant and not have to name the individual employee who happened to be driving the car or doing whatever caused the injury, because they're not paying anyway, unless it's intentional, wanton misconduct. Then they may be liable outside the scope of employment, but anything within the scope is paid for in full by the state.
Up to the tort claim limits. And I think, Mr. Chairman, that we've raised this point a couple of prior times, but under common law, there was no immunity for a state employee. They were fully liable for their torts. And we question, and the Supreme Court has twice questioned or noted that they're not deciding whether an individual employee is liable or not. A lot of times an employee of the state may be driving their car, may have $1 million of coverage on their car, and because they're on a state errand, the tort claim limit would give immunity to the individual's insurance company.
I just have never heard, maybe you can tell me, Charlie, I never heard in an action against the state of some employee who was driving the sand truck that he wasn't paying attention and ran into the car being sued personally beyond the $300,000 or $500,000 tort limitation. I never saw that rendered in a case, and I was just wondering what I was missing.
Well, there's been no, this has never actually been decided by any appellate court, whether or not...
I'm surprised it hasn't been. It seemed like somebody would have tested it and said, well, we got hurt for $1 million here, but we only got $300,000 out of the state. We wanted to get the rest of it out of this guy's private insurance policy, and I just can't believe that hasn't been litigated.
You know, it's interesting, because you know, a lot of the stuff we're talking about, the in excess of the state tort claim limits, there are truly very few cases. I mean, we're talking not about a lot of money. It's very important to the very few people that it does affect, but it's not. We had proposed during the last session an increase in the tort claim limits, a substantial increase, and Senator Cohen in the Senate got a copy from the Attorney General's office of all of the claims of the state above the existing tort claim limits, and there really were very few. And I think you'll find that this bill is really aimed at making life a little easier for some assistant attorney generals and is not really going to have any particular impact to some, except in some limited situations where it may be important to some people. As I understand the probation case, there was a decision, I think by Judge Justice Rossman, where a person who was on probation for drugs reported to their probation officer that they were taking heroin again. The probation officer did nothing, didn't report to the court, didn't do anything, and then the person ran down the two little kids in Beaverton, and the court said there could be a jury question in that case. Those are my main points. I'd be glad to answer
any
questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williamson. Questions? Representative Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know. I don't think this is the question of the witness as much as the other members of the committee could help me out, as or the other witnesses. Regarding the elimination of discovery, the rationale behind that, seemed in a couple of cases this session we've extended action after discovery, and this seems to be going the other way. I'm just thinking, if a person in good faith hasn't discovered their injury or reasons for their injury after up until the two-year period, after the two-year period, why they should be stopped from pursuing, you know, some remedy to their injury? Because we're eliminating that.
Hmm? You're asking a question?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Landau may want to respond to that if he heard the question.
Up and did
were you asking Mr. Williamson, Mr. Landau, or
Mr. Landau? Why we do that? Why eliminate the discovery? Why, if a person has not discovered their injury, or haven't discovered the reason for the injury, might involve a public agency for 2 years, but then discovers it, why should they be shut out of some recourse?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, our principal reason is because that's what the language of the law and the legislative history of the 1981 law, it seems to indicate the legislature wanted. There was a two-year statute of limitations, I believe, that was enacted in 1969. Then there were some changes in that, and the 1981 law was supposed to bring us back to a clean two-year statute of limitations, and that's the principal rationale for our proposal. I suppose that you can always argue, why should we have a limit at X years? There's always going to be a case when you can always come up with a horror story that wouldn't fall within a statute of limitations. The question is, or the problem is, that the state has to draw a line someplace, and I think what we are saying is that the legislature certainly has good reason to say that as a matter of public policy, 2 years ought to be enough.
May I respond, Mr. Chair?
Please do.
I just call your attention to the top of page 2 of Catherine Clark's testimony. She was familiar with the deals that were made in 1981, and she writes that central to the decision of the legislature at that time was the proposition that the notice of claim and limitation provisions were not nearly as restrictive as they seemed on the surface because of the discovery rule, which had been applied by the court at that time. So that the legislature knew perfectly well when they amended the statute in 1981 that the discovery rule applied, and they said, fine, we'll leave it there. They did not go along with the Oregon State Bar Bill to totally repeal the tort claim notice provision because of that. So I don't think that Mr. Landau is correct in saying that's what the legislature intended.
Further questions that can give you clear answers, Representative?
No, I think I understand that. I personally like the discovery period.
Thank you, Representative Bryan.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gerritsen, you had some brief comments, and if you can, it appears that because we are lacking sufficient numbers to be into a work session.
Very brief, Mr. Chair. I won't even sit down. My name is Darrell Gerritsen, Assistant Legal Counsel for Marion County. I'm here on behalf of both Marion County and AOC. We would encourage the passage of 3520, and we would encourage the passage with our amendment, the definition of discretionary immunity. It's our feeling that that embodies the intent of the legislature when they adopted the term discretionary immunity, and we'll clarify what it means, what it meant to when it was adopted and straighten out some of the Supreme Court decisions, which are all over the map.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to speak on House Bill 3520? Nobody else signed up, I don't believe. If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3520. And anything else to come before the subcommittee, Council?
No, sir.
All right. The Family Justice Subcommittee will start in approximately 5 minutes. The Civil Law Subcommittee is adjourned.